Hi, you're listening to How to Business, a podcast by the Small Business Development Center in Chattanooga, Tennessee. I'm Madison from the SBDC team, and in this episode, we'll be covering our top 7 myths of starting and managing a business. The conversation will be led by our director, Lynn Chestnut, and counselor, Sarah Mattson.
Thanks, Madison. This is Sarah, and I'm here with Lynn Chestnut.
Hey, Sarah, how are you?
Doing great. I'm so excited about our topic for the podcast for this episode. When we were coming up with things to discuss, one of the first ideas we had was this topic of myth busting. As counselors at the SBDC, we get a lot of frequently asked questions, and we learned pretty quickly that there are a lot of myths out there. I don't know where people hear some of these things. There's just a lot of common beliefs about a small business, and we're going to cover 7 common myths that we hear, and then we're going to bust those myths. Right, Lynn?
Right. I think, Sarah, a couple of places that I hear that people get this information is first, of course, the internet. And as we know, not everything is true on the internet. And also from people who may have thought about starting the business and something may have been relevant 20 years ago, 30 years ago, it may not be now. We get a lot of misinformation out there. As you said, this was one of our favorite topics. I'm looking forward to talking about these 7.
Yeah, we have 7 myths. So let's dive right in because we actually have a lot to cover on this episode. So let's start with the very first myth. Build it and they will come. Why is owning a business not like the field of dreams?
Well, people have an idea. In my opinion, people have a great idea. And because they have a great idea, they have a great product, a great service, they think everybody's going to be as excited about it as they are. And therefore, if they just put it out there, everybody will come flying in their door or going to their website or whatever. And as you and I know, that's just not how the world works.
Yeah, so really this is a marketing issue or lack of marketing. How many times have we looked at a business plan and the marketing strategy was quote-unquote word of mouth? Word of mouth can be a marketing strategy, but you absolutely cannot depend on that. Personally, I get so frustrated when I drive through town and I'll see a new restaurant and haven't heard anything about it on social media. I haven't seen it advertised anywhere. It worries me that they built it and think that just because the restaurant's open, people are going to know about it and come to it. And that's just not the case. You really do have to have a comprehensive marketing strategy. So let's talk about some things that people can do to get people to come to their business. And this isn't just, to be clear, not just brick and mortar. This is true with websites as well.
Absolutely. The website, you mentioned websites. Having a good website to drive people to their store, restaurant, or their online business is so important. And then, of course, using social media, SEO, Google business page, things like that. Those are vital. Sarah, how many times have you gone to a new city and you're looking for a certain type of restaurant? And I know you, and I know that's one of the things you love to do. Where do you go?
Google, usually. Google Maps is a really important first step when you open a business. And a lot of people don't realize. They think this has to do with if you create the website, then you'll automatically show up on Google. There's a lot that you can do on your website, especially if you hire a professional to do your website that will enhance your SEO or search engine optimization. But one step that I see a lot of people miss is creating their Google business page. And what that is getting you literally on the map. So really the Google Map. And this is true with Apple, too. If you're in Safari, Apple has their own map and locations, and you can get on that map as well. But it's really the new yellow pages. When you do a search inquiry, the first thing that comes up, well, the first thing that comes up is usually ads. But then the next thing that comes up is the Google map. And that's where you see the map on the right side and you see a list of restaurants with their star rating, their address, their phone number, their website. And that doesn't just get created automatically necessarily. I think Google and Apple do sometimes scrape information and will plug in, but you want control of that page. And we can help you with that at the SBDC. We can help you know the steps, what you need to do. It doesn't cost anything. It's not an ad. It's just like creating a profile on Google. So to me, that's one of the most important marketing things you need to do. The whole point is to drive people to your website or to your storefront. So that's how you can do it digitally. Then, of course, social media, which we all know is incredibly powerful. So business owners need to not discredit social media. Or one very common thing I hear, Lynn, you probably too, is that I don't use social media personally. I don't like social media. There's nothing but politics on social media.
It is. And personally, Sarah, I'm not a big social media person, but I understand the value from a business perspective. It also, correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of people feel like because they are on social media personally, that they understand how to drive their social media from a business perspective. And it's so different.
Really do have to separate those out in your minds. Another thing I see on social media is people blending their personal social media with their business. They make it almost too personal. You should have personality in your business. People do want to know behind the scenes and who the owner is, but sometimes people don't do a great job of separating their personal life from the business page. So you really have to approach social media as a true advertising tool. Is so different than your personal social media.
Right. And it also, your social media, we talked about Google business page. This drives people, also gives you your call of action to get them to review you when they've had a great experience, which, as we know, when we're looking for places to go eat, when we're traveling business-wise, we're looking for those 4- and 5-star reviews.
Yep.
And so it's so important. So in your call to actions is having that public relations, sponsoring, maybe sponsoring something at your children's school or someone you know's school or a nonprofit. Maybe doing a campaign with them to show giving back to the community. That's one thing I love about areas that we live in is people love to support local and it's your giving back. And I think that's so important.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of ways that you can sponsor things like that in a very focused way. So finding schools in a neighborhood where your target market is, or maybe your target market is men aged 35 to 45. Well, guess what? A lot of them are parents and their kids are in sports. So you can get a sign on the baseball field or whatever. I love public relations because you can really leverage a bigger platform than what you have. And it usually doesn't cost anything. There are ways that you can pay to advertise with news agencies, for example, but a lot of times you can do a press release. I don't know why every business doesn't do this. And again, we can help you with that because I can see how it can be intimidating. You can reach out to news agencies, local morning talk shows, Nuga Today. A lot of times, if your business is a compelling story or it's something that the public's going to be excited about, a lot of news agencies are happy to like pick that up and do a release on it. And then you have an audience of 10, 15,000, 20,000 followers, whereas your own page may only have like your grandma and your 3 best friends so far.
I think the last thing on this one that I would say is it lets you control the narrative as opposed to others controlling the narrative, which is so important. You need to control the narrative of who your business is and what it's about. A lot of things on that build it and they will come. Number two, this is also a popular one. Everybody is my customer. Everyone is my customer. I'll just start that one off. Tell me what triggers you about that. And we obviously know that I don't care what you're making or what you're selling. Not everyone is your customer.
I think the trigger is because I literally see this on almost every business plan that I read. And the problem is that there's no way that you can do true targeted marketing and spend your money wisely if you think that everyone is your customer. What I implore people to do is figure out who your most ideal customer is, or if you're already in business, you could pay attention to who your most typical customer is and then double down on them. So let's say that you have a retail shop and your most typical customer is college age girls that come in and buy jewelry. Don't go out trying to now capture boomer aged women to come in and buy jewelry. You've already got college-age girls' attention, so double down on that and get more of that market or sell more items that appeal to them. So that's one way you can utilize narrowing down your target market and identifying your customers.
It helps you spend your dollars more wisely. You're getting a better return on investment if you're targeting what you know is already working. And I think you would agree, it doesn't mean that a 55-year-old woman isn't going to come in and buy jewelry. They're going to, but that's not your primary. That's not your true target.
And I think that's where people are getting hung up, is that they're like, anyone could come into my restaurant. Well, that's true. But if you pay attention, you'll notice there are demographics who aren't coming to your establishment or your website. So let's talk about some ways that people can narrow down. How do we define our target market?
You mentioned demographics is one. Also geographic. In Chattanooga, if your business is in East Brainerd, yes, you may have people from Signal Mountain or Lookout Mountain coming, but that's quite a ways. Target people that are in a 5-mile radius of you. Start working your way out.
On that, I want to mention an example. I had a client who wanted to open a restaurant in the East Brainerd area, and one of their target markets was college students. And I was like, well, it's kind of a long ways from any college. So that's a good example, I think, of think about, yeah, you could have college students go there, but unless you're opening up near the campus, that's not going to be a prime market for you.
Another one's lifestyle indicators, people that enjoy the same lifestyles. For me, as you know, my favorite pastime is golf. I'm less likely to be that person that's going to come in and buy a piece of jewelry. I don't fit that lifestyle indicator that someone else does. So finding people that it's their lifestyle. I would also say if you're selling a higher end jewelry, then you can look at income levels.
Yeah.
Who can afford what you are selling? Who does that fit? Another one that I hear you talk about a lot that I want you to talk about are tribes.
Yeah, so this kind of goes hand in hand with the lifestyle indicators. So tribes are golfers, vegans, outdoors enthusiasts, rock climbers, like people who kind of all have a common interest. If you can identify a tribe that is coming into your business, you can do such great marketing with that. I do have clients who have golfers as a target market, so that's a great example. So things that you can do is the golf communities, a lot of times will have like a neighborhood magazine, and you can advertise in that magazine. You could sponsor a clinic at the country club or something like that. Sure. If you're a chiropractor who wants to target golfers, you could maybe offer a golfer's discount.
Yeah, you're exactly right. It's finding those communities, like you said, because in our area, several of those communities have 300 and 400 homes in there.
Yeah.
People who go and live at a golf course, almost all of them play golf. That's the reason they're there. It's a perfect example. Sarah, one thing I want to mention, I used this example with someone on Everyone Is My Customer. This person was making a very high-end type of food product. She said, my customer base is 400,000 people. And I laughed. And she said, why are you laughing? And I said, because I'll give you an example. My father loved what you make, but my father's probably the cheapest man ever to walk the face of the earth. He would never have spent the money that it costs for your product. Your product's a great product, but it's a higher-end product, and not everybody sees the value in that. It's not just maybe whether they can afford it or not. Is that where they want to spend their money?
Yeah. So we at the SBDC, we have access to market research. We can have a ring study done of a certain zip code. So let's say you have a jewelry store, since we keep talking about that. We can do a ring study showing the geographical location of your jewelry store within 1 mile, 3 mile, 5 mile, how many people are in that radius, how many people making X income are in that radius, how many people who are homeowners, how many college students, how many people who have children. Powerful research information. The whole point of this is not to create more work for you. It'll make everything so much easier if you can identify and just do better marketing and get more customers and get more revenue is the whole point.
And it's more cost effective at the end of the day. You have a finite number of marketing dollars, use them wisely. That's key.
All right, number three, this one's also triggering for me. I have no competition.
Wow.
I'm new to Chattanooga. No one else is doing this. There's no competition. No one's doing this the way I'm doing it.
These are the people who've never heard of Amazon, right? No matter what you're doing, you have competitors. They may be passive, like we talked about with an Amazon, but you do have competition. The thing that I tell people is you may be doing it differently, and that's where you sell how you're doing it differently. But you need to identify your competition because you do have competition. Sarah, I tell people that research you were talking about, we can help them identify who their competitors are.
Yeah.
And I tell them, you need to shop your competitors. You need to look at their websites. If they have a storefront, you need to walk in their store as a customer. You need to do your research to find out how you can do it better, more efficiently, whatever it may be. But do not tell us you don't have competitors. I've been here 5 years. I spent 33 years helping small businesses through banking. I've never seen anyone who didn't have a competitor.
A tip that I give clients is maybe there's not someone doing the exact same thing as you, but what other options does your customer have? So let's say you're doing something that's like an entertainment type venue, like an escape room or something like that. But think of something that maybe it's not in Chattanooga. So they're like, this is new to Chattanooga. It's never been done before. I don't have any competition. Not true. Your competition is axe throwing places that we already have, movie theater, anything else that someone can do on a Friday night within that price point is your competition. So it doesn't have to be the exact same model as your business. It has to be another choice that your customer has.
Exactly. You talk about it, it can be something as simple as bowling. Anything that is entertainment for people is competition. What makes yours more fun? What makes yours better for if you're attracting family? People think of the exact thing they're doing. You just show them how something that's different, but it's still activity surrounding, is a competitor for them.
Yep. And you can use the same example for a restaurant. Like say someone says, oh, there's no Korean barbecue in Chattanooga. I'm going to open a Korean barbecue. No, there may not be. So you don't have Korean barbecue competition, but literally every other restaurant in your price range or in your geographical location or with the same target market is your competition also. I just want to add before we move on to the next one, you mentioned the research that we can do. Another great way to research is once you've identified who your competition is, read through their reviews on Google and on Facebook, and you can learn a lot about a business's strengths and their weaknesses, what customers like about them, what customers don't like. So you can dig and get a lot of information just by combing through and reading your competition's reviews. You should do that through the life of the business, not just when you're getting started. You should always, like you said, stay on top of your competition and be aware of everything they have going on.
The last thing I would say on that real quickly is do not talk negatively about your competition. Instead, talk about the positives of your business.
Yeah.
The reason I say that is you mentioned looking at the reviews. So if they're not getting good reviews, don't dwell on that. Let others dwell on that. If somebody says that, say, well, I can't speak to that, but here's what we do, and I believe we do well.
Yeah, exactly. Number four, I don't need a team. I can do it all myself.
Of course we can, right? Yeah. It's a control thing. And if you're the business owner, it's your money, it's your livelihood. It's like another child. You have trouble trusting others in this. But as you and I know, business owners are good at generally what they're selling or what their service is. There are areas that they're not as good at or they're not as knowledgeable in. Some of the things that we talked about, a good team allows you to duplicate yourself. One thing I want to mention, 5 years ago, came on board as director of this SBDC. The thing I'm most proud of is building the team we have. This team, we all have strengths. Sarah and I are different people, but we work well with each other because we understand their strengths. I'm able to allow Sarah to do the things she does very, very well, and we work with each other on that. That allows you to duplicate yourself and get somebody who can do these other areas as well as you do the area you do.
Yep, I agree. It's really the only way that you can scale because there's only so many hours in the day. You have to figure out a way. I'll share this. I was so inspired by this. I was on a virtual event last week. Attorney Amanda Jelks here in Chattanooga, awesomely involved in the entrepreneurship community here in Chattanooga, but she gave some incredible advice. And I was like, I am writing that down and sharing. So here I am sharing it now. She says when she was growing her business, she had a hard time giving up control, as most entrepreneurs do. So she trained herself to always ask herself two questions about any task that she's about to do. One is, does it require my specific expertise? So in her case, does it require a legal degree to do it? So does it require your specific expertise? And does it require the owner being the one making decision? So is it something having to do with the lease of your building or an ownership decision? If not, you can probably outsource that or delegate it to someone. You're not the only one who can do bookkeeping. You're not the only one who knows how to call a plumber to fix the sink. You're not the only one who can follow up with a customer. Those are all things you can outsource.
You can. And one of the things I tell people, and I know you've done the same, is business owners don't always calculate what their value per hour is and what they're doing. I know Josh and I worked with some clients that we just loved to death, and they were every month, we would go by their office and they would be doing the billing. These are people that their skill set's worth $150 an hour. And Josh said to them, can you hire somebody to do your billing a lot less than $150 an hour? And they said, yes. He said, then why aren't you doing it?
Yeah. And here's a pro tip. I have found that a lot of clients are very intimidated of hiring people to do a job. Like hiring an employee, which I totally get, because then you have to train that employee. You have to put them on payroll. It's administrative. It can create more work than it can help. And I can see that. So one great tip is you don't have to hire a person. You can hire a company or a subcontractor. Find someone who's already doing this. So it doesn't have to be an internal employee that you outsource to. It could be a billing company, a third-party company. So that's something that sometimes people don't think about.
And ask your SBDC counselor. I know in our office, we have a referral list of different professionals that do different things. Mm-hmm. So ask for recommendations from people. If you have other business owners that you know, or you're networking, say to people, hey, I'm looking for someone to do this. There are others out there who will give you recommendations of people that they're using. And you're right, it can easily be a subcontract situation. It is a strength to be able to delegate. That's one of the things I learned very early. I failed at it miserably early in my banking life. And then one day, one of my best supervisors sat down with me and she said, Lynn, why are you trying to do all this yourself? What's that all about? You gave the great tips earlier on the specific expertise and things like that. It's a strength to get other people to help you do these things. Your time will be better spent on the business of the business.
Yep, and you can grow your business because now you've got more people to share those hours with.
Absolutely.
I'm gonna wrap up this one with one of my favorite book recommendations. It's a famous business book, E-Myth Revisited by Michael Gerber. And it's all about how to set up your business, basically using like the McDonald's franchise model. How to set up to where jobs are separated and easily delegated, how to automate your business, how to, as a business owner, get your hands out of the business so it creates a self-running machine. So that way you can enjoy the lifestyle you want to create as a business owner, that you're not neck deep in the business 7 days a week. You can step away and go enjoy the boat that you can now afford because of your business is so successful.
Exactly. And for those of you listening, reach out to Sarah or Madison if you ever want book recommendations, because believe me, they've got them. They read some amazing books and they're begrudgingly getting me coming along with them. So
if you're not a book reader or you don't have time to read a book, a lot of times you can look on YouTube and someone has done like a summary or like a PowerPoint kind of style. So you can just kind of get the gist of a book. I have found that to be really helpful too.
Or do it as a podcast, like you're listening to ours. Sarah, the next one.
This is your trigger.
This is the one, and I want to tell everybody, this is the only time you're going to hear me say this word, because this is a word that I do not believe in at all. And it's called free money. Those of you that know me know I hate the word free, because nothing in life is free. Somebody has to pay for it. Please do not use that word in my presence. Free money. I'm sorry. It does not exist. There's virtually no, quote, free money for startups. And we're just coming out of this COVID world we're in. There's been a lot of grant-oriented things. But let's face it, COVID is a hopefully once-in-a-lifetime thing that happens to us. During, quote, normal times, SBA does not provide grants. They don't even provide loans. They do guarantees of loans. If you want more information about that, we do a whole seminar on that. But you, first of all, must have some of your own resources to start a business. It's called skin in the game. I preach that. I tell people, if you're not willing to invest in your own idea, why would anybody else do it, right? Why would anybody else invest loan monies, invest as an investor, whatever it may be? It's just not there, folks. Do not go buy the $39.95 book on the internet on all these free monies out there for your business.
A book because, we do not recommend.
Right. You might as well send us the $40. We'll invest it in continuing to help you.
What if I'm a woman-owned, minority-owned, or veteran-owned business? Doesn't the government have grants for that?
Well, first of all, if you're any of those, you're working hard at that, and it hasn't always been easy. But no, there are no government grants or whatever designation you have. That has to do with government contracting. There are set-aside contracts for certain designations, women-owned, minority-owned, veteran-owned. But it's not free money. It gives you an opportunity, if you're going after those contracts, to bid on those. In my years of banking, there were, years ago, discriminatory practices. Well, if you give monies based on a status, that's discriminatory. So no, it doesn't exist. And it's now, hopefully, we're getting to more of a level playing field to have opportunities for people regardless of these stats, regardless of these designations.
I kind of want to reiterate what you said about SBA providing guarantees for loans. The most common thing I hear is, they're like, doesn't the government want people to start business? That's how small businesses are the foundation or the building blocks of the economy. Yes, and that's why the SBA does loan guarantees. Otherwise, it's very difficult, if not impossible, to get even a loan as a startup business, much less a grant. So the SBA has programs in place for startups to be able to get loans through banks that are SBA partners. That's the benefit that the federal government has created to allow small businesses to get loans. To get that loan, you still have to have a down payment, you still have to have good credit, you still have to have all the things, right, Lynn?
You do. And you mentioned the government and the creation of SBA. Well, out of that also came SBDC, because the technical assistance side wasn't there. So that's why we exist. Look, if you've had some issues from credit, you've had some other things that have come up, talk to us and let us talk to you about maybe there are some alternative ways to put this together, because there could be some alternative financing options out there. But we need to figure out what fits best for your situation. That's why you talk to your counselor. When we talk about grants, there are grants, Sarah, as you know, out there. A lot of grants are surrounding certain industries, maybe green energy or engineering, things like that. A lot of private organizations will put grants out there. I want to caution people, there can be stringent guidelines surrounding these grants, and you're required to do certain things and to get toward certain outcomes. If you don't, there can be what we call clawback features, where they can request part or all of those monies back if you don't bid, you don't meet those guidelines.
I have seen grants come out from, like, FedEx has a very popular grant program, I believe. These are highly competitive grants too, right?
Yes, they are. You have to write a proposal. There are people that help do grant writing out there. You just don't call up FedEx and go, hey, I'm a small business and I do this and this fits and I need $25,000. It's not how it works. There's a process behind it. You're right. It's very, very competitive.
Yeah. And some of those applications we've seen, this is where people stumble. Sometimes there is an opportunity that a private organization has a pitch competition or a grant. So some stumbling blocks we have seen businesses see is that they have 1 week until the application deadline to get in everything they need. So my best advice, and we saw this tremendously when people needed urgent funding when the pandemic started, have your business set up well so that if you see an opportunity, you can jump on it quickly. If a pitch competition comes up, if a local business is doing a grant contest, here in Chattanooga, TBSEU does the Idea Leap grant program. But if you want to apply for something like that, you need to have your bookkeeping in order. You need to have your tax returns. You need to have a good reputation for your business. You need to have good marketing, good branding. You need to have a well-oiled machine and well-set-up business, usually, to qualify for one of these private-type grants like that. Right, Lynn?
Exactly. They're going to look for the health of a business, that you have the ability to use these grant monies, either grow or sustain. Very, very important. Let's get off that one.
But,
yeah, I can't do any more.
Take a breath.
Well, I'm going to hit you with one now that gets your trigger a little bit, and that's contractors versus employees. Sarah, I've got my business, and I'm going to hire some people, but I'm a little full of all those taxes and all that stuff, so I'm just going to 1099 them.
What I always tell people, don't be lazy, don't be cheap, don't be ignorant. So don't be lazy. Don't pay people as 1099 just because you don't want to go through the hassle, quote unquote, of making them an employee. And I will agree, it is a hassle having W-2 employees. It is a lot of administrative work. But the IRS and the Department of Labor have very strict guidelines about whether you can make someone a 1099 or if they have to be a W-2. So you actually don't have a choice in the matter. So don't be lazy and say, it's just too difficult. And they only work 5 hours a week, so I'm just going to pay them as a contractor. Sometimes you got to take those steps. Nowadays, there's some incredibly great payroll companies. That's a great one of those things that you can outsource to a third-party company. They'll set up everything you need to be able to have employees. You can have a bookkeeper manage all your payroll taxes. So don't be lazy. And I say don't be cheap, because when you have W-2 employees, you do have to pay a little bit extra in taxes. So if you get an audit by the Department of Labor, which is pretty likely, the Department of Labor does a lot of audits on this. I've had businesses here in Chattanooga who are under audit right now. If you do get an audit and they deem that you should have been paying these people as employees all the years that you've been in business, they could make you go back and pay back tax and penalties for all those years that you were paying people incorrectly. That could really bite you, could bankrupt completely.
If I'm ignorant to all of this, the IRS and the Department of Labor will totally give me a break, right?
The ignorant part, I have had clients who are like, well, when I worked in this field, I was always paid as a 1099. So they just assumed that was the way to do it. That's what I mean with don't be ignorant. Know that there is a difference between contract and W-2 employees, and you don't have the choice of which one you want to do. You do have to choose the correct option per the IRS and Department of Labor guidelines.
You made a good point about the payroll services. When they're doing it, they take care of all that. Then if there's a mistake, that's on them, because that's part of their service. They're going to take the hit for that. We also can provide people with referrals to employment attorneys. If they've got a gray area question, get the question answered by a professional. Don't ask your Uncle Joe that was in business 30 years ago what he did. The laws have changed quite a bit since then. Get some legal advice. You can pay them now or pay them later.
Exactly. And that's where a lot of people get hung up. A lot of industries, it's very obvious that the person should be a W-2 and not a contract worker. But there is a lot of gray area also. So that's where we do usually refer to an employment attorney to help you decide, because my understanding is a lot of the gray areas, for example, caterers, if you do events for a wedding and you hire servers for a catering event, super gray area. It is kind of hard to distinguish if that should be an employer or a contractor. At some point, a caterer probably sued the government, arguing that they should be contractors, and the courts made a determination if that should be a contractor or an employee. So a good employment attorney will be able to look at precedent cases to know, like, oh, nope, we've seen this before, and they determine that caterers are definitely employees or definitely contractors. I don't know the outcome of that particular situation.
One last point I want to make on this subject is if you've had somebody working for you for a while, you can show them that they're valued by changing them over to an employee. There's a feeling of stability, number one. But number two, when they're an W-2 employee, this affects how their Social Security, potential retirement is all figured. There's some long-term things that you can do for people that are your most valued in your business. While it is a dollars and cents decision, you have to think about the long-term of how your employees see you and how valued they feel. That's sort of an intangible.
And I'll just kind of close this myth. You can Google IRS 20 questions, contractor, something like that. There's 20 questions that the IRS has established that you can go through if you want to try to get an idea if you're on the right path with your employees or contract workers. So I would start with that. So you just Google the IRS 20 questions for contractors versus employees to see if you are obviously maybe paying them wrong or if you feel like you're in the clear. So that would be a good place to start. Well, that brings us to our seventh myth, our final one. I worry about the financials later. I just want to get this business up and running. I have this opportunity, or I believe in what I'm selling, and I just want to get it going, and I'll worry about finances later. Why is that a myth?
Well, if you started out right, then it will always be set up right, and it is much easier to do. Sarah, how many times in your life, I know in my life, have we procrastinated about something, and then when we started to tackle it, it was a daunting task. It caused us so many more hours of time to fix it when we could have set it up right to begin with. In this case, by not setting it right, are you risking not paying the appropriate taxes, whatever it may be? One of the things I know in our office, we have a seminar, Starting Up Bookkeeping, Entrepreneurial Bookkeeping. The person that does this goes to 10 do's and don'ts. And also understanding you need to, and I'm going to use a Dave Ramsey analogy, you need to make every dollar behave. So you need to know where every dollar is with your financials from the beginning, and you need to assign that dollar to whatever it is, whether it's your marketing, whether it's your payroll, whether it's cash is king, cash flow is king in your business. If you try to worry about it later, one day you're going to look and you're going to go, I have no money. I can't make payroll. Just because you have a balance in your account doesn't mean you have any money.
Oh, I see that all the time. People are only looking at their bank account and not at their financial reports that show their actual profit and their actual cash flow. They see money in their accounts and they go out and make a big purchase, or they transfer it to their personal account and pay themselves. Get a system. Like Lynn said, know where every dollar goes, be more efficient with your money, and be a good steward of your business finances so that you're not spinning your wheels and wasting money. At the end of the day, you want more profit, right?
Absolutely.
Don't try to get more and more and more clients. A lot of times it's just a matter of spending your money and keeping an eye on the business's finances a little bit better.
Two things that we talked about before were this fits. Number one, if you need funding, they're going to look at your financials. And if your financials are a mess, you're not getting funding. Two, if you're looking at a grant opportunity, and Sarah, as you mentioned earlier, they're going to look at how your business is run financially. It makes sense. I think another one, and you can speak to this well, this is an area you understand very, very well, is all of a sudden it's time for you to get everything to your CPA for your taxes, and you have not been keeping up with it. Is it going to cost you more or less for that CPA to do your taxes?
It is always so much more work to do a cleanup job on your bookkeeping than to just get it all set up and ran from the beginning. So that brings us to another point, Lynn, and probably one of our final points here is, what if I have a bookkeeper and accountant? Then I shouldn't have to worry about my finances, right? I've outsourced that.
Oh, yeah, of course. What I like to say, the analogy of trust, but verify. You should verify, and this is nothing against, there are some amazing CPAs and bookkeepers, but you should know what your financials look like and how everything is running regardless. It also helps you determine, do I have the right bookkeeper and CPA working with me on this? You should always know that. Again, for funding, people are going to ask you about your financials, and you cannot defer to your CPA. Always have the professionals helping you. As you said, Sarah, you should be pulling your P&L, your balance sheet, your income statement, checking where you are at all times. It will also help you head off maybe a future issue that if you don't look at, you would not see coming.
Exactly. And how are you going to make hiring decisions and spending decisions for your business if you don't even know what your numbers are looking?
Exactly. It can help you grow your business much more efficiently. You may not realize you have the money to hire that new employee that you so desperately need. This is a biggie, and we see it all the time.
Absolutely. I've had a few clients who they had been in business for years, and then they went and got all their bookkeeping cleaned up and realized they were barely breaking even, and they had no idea. They thought, I'm making money. I've not run out of money yet. But when they looked at everything, their profit was dismal. They weren't actually paying themselves. So what they were doing was investing a lot of their own time and not getting paid for it. And they had spent years working full time in this business, not making a dime and not realizing it. It's terrifying.
Absolutely. Let's wrap this up here. These myths are just seven. There are a lot more out there. What I'd like to say to the folks is this. There are a lot of misinformation. There's a lot of things out there that you're going through. Please talk to a professional, contact your SBDC, talk to one of the counselors, and get some good information. Like if you contact our office, we don't know the answer. We know where to find it, and we'll help you find this information. By busting some of these, hopefully we've helped you take a look at where you are. We hope it's just help. Right, Sarah?
Absolutely. Reach out to an SBDC. We're here to help you.
Thanks for listening to How to Business, a podcast by the Small Business Development Center in Chattanooga, Tennessee. If you liked today's episode, we invite you to subscribe to our podcast and to take a moment and rate it on the mainstream podcast platforms. The How to Business podcast is produced by Pod Topics in collaboration with the SBDC of Chattanooga. To learn more about Pod Topics, visit podtopics.com.